Welcome to HN Pod, your daily dose of the top trending stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is March 8th, 2026, and this is episode number 329. We are so glad you are joining us today.
We have a really fun and diverse lineup for you today. We are going to look at a wild hardware mod called the Framebook, dive into the shifting goalposts of artificial general intelligence, celebrate some long-awaited Markdown support in LibreOffice Writer, get into the technical weeds of writing Rust-based WebAssembly, and finally, we will look at a cool new macOS tool for sandboxing your local AI coding agents.
Let us kick things off with some serious hardware hacking. Our first story today, sitting at 325 points, is called Framebook. It is a blog post by a developer named Todd Sarsody, and it outlines a massive DIY project. The creator essentially took the guts of a modern Framework Laptop 13 and stuffed them inside the chassis of a first-generation black polycarbonate MacBook from 2006.
Oh man, I remember those black MacBooks. They were such a status symbol back in my college days, mostly because it was the only way to get a black Apple laptop, unless you had an older PowerBook. But obviously, the performance of a 2006 machine by today's standards is completely unusable.
Exactly. So this creator bought a few broken ones off eBay, got at them completely, and managed to fit an Intel Core i7 mainboard, 64 gigabytes of RAM, and a modern display panel into that classic plastic shell. And I have to say, this was not just a simple drop-in replacement. They had to teach themselves to solder, they used 3D printed standoffs held in with Gorilla Glue, and they even had to Dremel out the side of the case to fit new USB-C hubs.
The dedication is just incredible. They even managed to get the Apple logo on the back to glow using a custom LED panel, since the original relied on the screen's backlight bleeding through. And they wired up the original Apple keyboard and trackpad using a custom USB controller, so it actually feels like using the original machine.
The Hacker News comments on this one were a massive nostalgia trip. A lot of people were reminiscing about those old polycarbonate MacBooks, but also pointing out their infamous hardware flaws. A user named Masklin pointed out how the palm rests on those models would constantly crack and splinter right where your wrists rested, leaving jagged plastic digging into your arms.
Yeah, another user mentioned buying broken ones for cheap when they were a broke student, taking them to the Apple Store for the free extended warranty repair, and flipping them for a profit. It is a really cool project, though. It bridges that gap between the repairability and modularity of the modern Framework ecosystem and the classic nostalgic design of vintage Apple hardware.
Definitely. Although I do have to laugh at the creator apologizing in the blog post for using super glue instead of proper plastic welding. Hey, if it works, it works.
Moving on to our second story, which grabbed 315 points, we have a blog post by Martin Lumistay titled "The Changing Goalposts of AGI and Timelines." This one is pretty spicy, Mike.
It really is. Martin points out that back in 2018, OpenAI published a charter with a self-sacrifice clause. Basically, it said that if a value-aligned, safety-conscious project comes close to building artificial general intelligence before they do, OpenAI commits to stop competing and start assisting that project. The trigger condition they gave was a better-than-even chance of success in the next 2 years.
Right, and Martin tracks Sam Altman's public predictions for AGI over the last few years to show how much the narrative has shifted. Back in May 2023, Sam was saying 2033. By late 2024, it was 2029. And in recent interviews from late 2025 and early 2026, he has been saying things like, "We basically have built AGI," or "The AGI moment came and went."
Meanwhile, Martin looks at the current large language model arena rankings. And as of right now, in March 2026, OpenAI's flagship GPT-5.4 model is actually trailing behind models from Anthropic and Google. Claude Opus 4.6 and Gemini 3.1 are taking the top spots. So Martin argues that by the letter of their own charter, OpenAI should surrender the race and join forces with Anthropic or Google, since those competitors clearly have a better than even chance of hitting the AGI threshold first.
Which, of course, Martin admits will never actually happen. It is a classic case of naive idealism clashing with massive economic incentives. You do not just hand over a multi-billion dollar business because of a blog post you wrote in 2018.
The Hacker News comments really dug into the semantics of it all. User DJ Oldman said that whenever they see the acronym AGI or ASI, they mentally replace it with something no one has defined meaningfully.
That is so true. The definition keeps shifting depending on who you ask. Is it a model that can do economically valuable work? Is it human-level intelligence at every single task? Because as one commenter joked, some humans fail to be an AGI by that standard.
It really highlights how the term has been co-opted for marketing. We went from AI, meaning Markov chains, to neural nets, to now AGI and ASI, or artificial superintelligence. It feels like the goalposts will just keep moving as long as there is venture capital to raise and products to sell.
Let us shift gears to some software news. LibreOffice 26.2 is officially here, and the big headline for our crowd is that LibreOffice Writer now supports Markdown import and export. This story got 245 points on the front page.
It is about time. LibreOffice has been the trusty open source alternative to Microsoft Word for decades, but it has always been very tied to that 1990s what you see is what you get document paradigm. Adding Markdown support is a huge quality of life improvement for developers and technical writers who just want to write in plain text, but occasionally need to output a properly formatted corporate document.
The release notes also mention better performance for large documents and improved compatibility with proprietary formats, which is always the holy grail for LibreOffice. But the Hacker News thread was really dominated by a debate over the fundamental philosophy of Office Suites.
Yeah, user CXR made a really passionate argument that LibreOffice missed an opportunity years ago. Instead of just trying to clone Microsoft Office and fight over XML standards, they should have pushed for a web-native, HTML-based container format that anyone could open in a browser. They argued that the Microsoft Office editing paradigm is a dead end.
But other users pushed back hard on that. User Bitwise pointed out that ordinary people rely on that interface. They need built-in version control, annotations, and familiar formatting tools. Expecting an office worker to just use Vim and Git with Markdown is what they called being programmer-brained.
I have to agree with Bitwise there. We live in a tech bubble where plain text and Markdown feel like the natural way to write. But for 99% of the world, a Word-style interface is what they know and want. People fought tooth and nail to keep WordPerfect back in the day just because it was familiar. Still, having LibreOffice bridge that gap by letting us import and export Markdown natively is a massive win. I know I'll be using it to convert some old doc files into clean Markdown for my personal notes.
Next up, we have a highly technical but incredibly useful post titled Notes on Writing Rust-Based WASM, which got 189 points. It is a blog post by Brooklyn Zelenka, and it is basically a survival guide for using the WASM bindgen tool.
If you have ever tried to compile Rust to WebAssembly and interface it with JavaScript, you know exactly why this post is necessary. You are essentially trying to bridge two completely different memory models. You have JavaScript on one side, which is garbage collected and asynchronous, and you have Rust on the other side, which has strict ownership and borrowing rules.
Brooklyn points out that WASM bindgen is great, but it can be a massive footgun if you are not careful. For example, if you pass an owned Rust value over to JavaScript, Rust will eventually free that memory, but JavaScript might still hold a handle to it. The next time your JavaScript code tries to use it, boom, you get a runtime error and a null pointer.
Her biggest piece of advice is to pass everything over the WASM boundary by reference unless you have a very specific reason not to. She recommends wrapping your types in reference-counted smart pointers like RC, RefCell, or ArcMutex. It adds a tiny bit of overhead, but she notes that the cost of crossing the WASM boundary eclipses a reference count bump anyway, so it saves you from nightmarish memory bugs without hurting performance.
She also has some great naming conventions, like prefixing all Rust exported types with WASM and JS imported types with JS. It sounds simple, but when you are juggling types across that boundary, keeping your namespaces visually distinct is a total lifesaver.
The comments on Hacker News brought up some exciting future developments too. User Mendy Berger mentioned that things are getting better with the WASM component model proposal, which Firefox is pushing right now. The idea is to expose web APIs directly to WebAssembly through a higher level interface, so you don't need all this JavaScript glue code in the first place.
That would be amazing. Right now, every time WebAssembly needs to talk to the DOM or use an API like IndexedDB, it has to marshal data back and forth through JavaScript. It's slow and complex. Being able to just drop a WASM file into a script tag and have it talk directly to the browser would be a game changer for web development. We're definitely keeping an eye on that proposal.
Our final story today is a tool called Agent Safehouse, sitting at 169 points. It is a macOS native sandboxing tool for local AI agents created by a developer named Eugene.
We all know the terrifying feeling of giving an AI coding agent shell access.
You tell it to clean up some temporary files in your project, and suddenly you are watching it type out a command to delete your entire home directory. A 1% chance of disaster with a probabilistic model means it is just a matter of time before it nukes your hard drive.
Exactly. Agent Safehouse solves this by using the built-in macOS Sandbox exec command. It uses a deny first access model enforced right at the kernel level. By default, the agent only gets read and write access to your current project directory and read-only access to your installed toolchains. Everything else, your SSH keys, your AWS credentials, your other repositories, your personal files, is completely blocked.
The best part is how simple it is to use. It is literally just a single bash script. No Docker containers, no virtual machines, no heavy dependencies. You just download the script, run your agent like Cloud Code, Codex, or Aider through it, and you are protected.
The creator, Eugene, chimed in on the Hacker News thread. He said he built it because he likes running his agents locally on his finely tuned MacBook, not on a remote server. He spent hours figuring out the exact minimum permissions needed for agents to still do things like auto-update and use the macOS keychain without compromising the rest of the system.
A commenter named Adam Bender, who actually submitted the post, mentioned they were already using it at work and loved the efficiency. They did note a few friction points, like the agent not being able to read global Git config files by default or run debugging tools like LLDB.
Eugene was super receptive to that feedback, pointing out how you can create a custom policy file to whitelist specific global paths. It is a really elegant solution to a very modern problem. As we give these AI coding assistants more autonomy, sandboxing the runtime is going to become absolutely essential. Another commenter from a startup called Arcade pointed out that sandboxing the runtime is only half the battle. You also need to scope the tools at the API layer, but this is a massive step forward for local development. For sure.
It gives you the peace of mind to just let the agent run on full auto without hovering over the terminal ready to hit cancel.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode. 5 fascinating stories covering everything from vintage hardware hacking and AI drama to software updates and kernel-level sandboxing.
Thank you so much for tuning in to HN Pod. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your friends and colleagues. It really helps us grow.
We will be back tomorrow with more of the pop stories and discussions from Hacker News. Until then, I am Mike.
And I am Sarah. Happy coding, everyone.